Welcome to Starving Nurse On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've been SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us with TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702 or for the best online experience, you go to twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you'll find us there. You'll be able to join our lovely chat room and have a lot of fun. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you'll follow me on Twitter. My accounts there are sfuoncall, Paul Franz, PAUFRANZ. There's no T in that. Then also Franz Games, FRANZGAMES. And again, there's no T in that. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. Steve Patrick's still working on the Orion NASA Starship book and has announced the tree for the Sapphire Star Tournament, which I'll mention a little bit later. Also found on the online store for this week, we found Planet and Base cards. Now, they're $2. Then it's 6 planet cards and 6 battle station cards, as seen in Capital's Log number 23. You'll need Capital's Log number 23 for the rules, or you can download them from the website. Now, these are double-sized cards, 4.5 inches by 3.5 inches, black and white, and they're non-coated stock. They are more placemats than cards, and they cannot be shuffled. So, read the rules. I had not read the rules, so I don't know what they say. But obviously, read the rules, and you'll be available for that. Moving on forward to the tournament, which I mentioned about with Steve Petrick, who is, of course, the tournament master. Sign-ups are closed. It's a worldwide tournament, you know, with spots in the world and in the wild world. Most of us obviously are either in the East Coast or West Coast. It's rare that I see anyone in the Midwest, though. We do have, of course, a couple people. We have New York. I'm not sure we have anybody in Ohio or Midwest. I'm not sure anyone's in the Midwest. I know we have some people in the West Coast, some people in the East Coast. We have somebody in Japan, Jeff Clark. And also we have someone in Australia, that's Jason Gray. So we are worldwide, just spot, you know, most of us obviously on the U.S. Big surprise, which makes obviously things easier for face-to-face, online that is, face-to-face, live action play. Moving on and forward to the library report. Actually, I do have a little bit of updates on the come to the SFB libraries. There are two fixes that occurred. One is the Carnivon Heavy Cruiser. The other one is the Lyran, I think it's Heavy Frigate. It's HFF. I'm not sure exactly that's the designation for. But both of those have been uploaded and with fixes. I will be updating more of the clinks this upcoming weekend. Also, when it comes to the FedCom library, no progress there. Sorry. And with that is the news for this week. Hey, and it's me. It's the Lonely Old Paul Franz welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me, of course. And we got Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And we actually have a couple of people in the chat room. Actually, one person, which I definitely owe some gratitude to, which is Russ. Russ did me a great favor in that I know we won. Go through all the space monsters. And one thing he did is he emailed me a PDF of where the monster scenarios are, and you know all the monster scenarios and where they're located, so I can make sure I'm ahead and know. And so we're going to go through all the scenarios, all the monsters that are available. There's one called Monsters, Monsters, Monsters. That one I'm gonna have to look at. I'm not sure. Well, if it's just a scenario which contains previous monsters, or it actually has a new monster, or you know, lots of monsters in one scenario, meaning like the same monster but like multiple, like a banshee kind of thing, with a lot of them. Hey, Chris. And Chris is in the chat room, which is always awesome to see. So, in our continuing up saga of going through the space monsters of SFB. Hey, it is continuing, and it's going to be a lot. Oh, yeah. Russ, don't bring this up. Yeah. Russ, don't bring up the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl again. They beat my Ravens. So what was that, Doug? I'm sorry.
Sorry about the laughter there. Sweetie just handed me a note saying, do we have a tappy-tappy thing to nail some wheels in with? So, yes, we do have a hammer here. Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. That is fine. There. Okay. So, this week, we're going to be starting with another one of Steve Cole's monster scenarios, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with, and I'm pretty sure it was part of last week's episode. That is, I showed some of the monsters that were on Shapeways. If you're watching the video portion, obviously the audio portion, that means, I mean, if you're just using audio only, obviously you would not be able to see them, and I didn't actually bring the bring them up. I didn't actually mention that I was showing them from Shapeways, but I was looking at them while the podcast was going on, and I was streaming my desktop so that people could actually see them, the different monsters that are available on Shapeways. And one of those, of course, is the moray eel. Somewhat a pretty cool. Moray eel is okay. The thing is, of course, it has the space dragons, which, if you really think about it, to me, space dragons, and, you know, when it comes to Shapeways, they don't have to be space dragons. They can just be regular dragons. You know, I'm not sure what the difference when it comes to look of a dragon, space dragon versus regular dragon. Don't know what the differences would be. Obviously, physicality-wise, yeah, there's physically, they're probably different in some simple ways, you know, because as is, if you really think about it, now we've never encountered one ourselves, you know. But when it comes to, we have never met a monster that lives in space in the dark depths of space, and the whole idea of a biological living in space is overall pretty fantastical, bridging onto the point of being, as I said, fantasy. Obviously, there could be just like crystal monsters, you know, or like the, let's say, the Tholians. They're also to us a very fantastical. Can that there actually be truly a race of people that basically are crystals, for the most part, is what they are. You know, obviously they have to live in a very hot environment and so forth. That's what the Tholians do. But you know, is that actually possible? We don't know, because everything that that scientists currently know is that you need usually carbon and oxygen. You need those, though I know they did some, what is it? There's some research around the outlets of volcanoes that shows that actually carbon and oxygen are not required. That you can live in a sulfuric atmosphere, or at least, you know, environment.
So, can I chime in on this one?
Sure.
I got two bits of information. One is, yeah, actually, oxygen is not necessarily a prerequisite for life. Straight up. That's the thing that comes out of a lot of the evolutionary studies. The history is back into deep time, where they're looking at fossil records and everything. There was a time when basically the life on Earth was literally not dependent on oxygen. Oxygen was a poison to it, and when plants started making it, that killed off. It was like the first major extinction. But that aside, I would say that, look, you know, if we have a truly infinite universe, not a bubble, it's theoretically possible that life will evolve in ways that are totally different. And a lot of the stuff in the monsters that he has are literally all canon for the Star Trek universe, for that science fiction realm. Although, not necessarily as immediately defined from the stuff he was originally licensed on, if that makes sense. Because I think they were kind of vague about the Tholian. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, understood. But yeah, actually, you know, definitely in the SFU universe, you know, the Starfleet universe itself, which is a little more, the Tholians are a little more fleshed out, at least my understanding.
Oh, another random thought on that is that if you really want to go on a deeper dive on it, you could have the possibility that self-replicating life, things that would count as life because they're self-replicating, might be engineered by original biological species like us for the purpose of surviving and doing tasks in space. And then, you know, somewhere along the way, it just gets, some of it gets lost track of and goes off and does its own thing, evolves its own way.
Mm-hmm. True. That's true.
There's a whole line of thought with when some people were talking about like the whole potential for us meeting aliens, is that we might not actually meet the species necessarily. We might meet robots that they built and sent out first, long before we would ever meet them.
Right.
Assuming they're not extinct already.
Right. That, which makes sense, you know, because we do that ourselves, which is we send out automated machines to explore the galaxy. Obviously, right now they're very primitive in that we still control them, but I definitely can see, you know, an AI based research, you know, drone that goes out into the universe and explores things and then sends the data back to Earth. Now the question is how long would they last, you know, and so forth. But we won't know. But that's definitely something you definitely could see occurring. Now, there's always, but the ultimate, I understand that the whole idea of the universe being so large and that life definitely could live outside of Earth. And because there's so many different environments, so many climates that are close to Earth, if just to have that kind of life form that should be able to also be created in the same environment that Earth is.
Well, here's the thing. It's a thing that I think a lot of people have a problem wrapping our relatively primitive brains around. Because, I mean, we were only a few generations out of being caveman, for God's sake, on a cosmological scale. And it's the whole concept of infinity. If you can imagine it, probably going to happen somewhere in an infinite universe, somewhere in out there, you know, way beyond the scope of what we can see, will exist the circumstance that creates the moment that you have imagined, whatever it may be.
And
the whole thing with like the potential for extraterrestrial life being as strange as the space monsters. Well, yeah, that's strange to us, to our limited history of what we've seen and learned and observed, but it could be a norm somewhere else. And again, there is that big cloud of beer out there, so there's that.
Oh, understood.
We were going to talk about SFD monsters, so.
True. But yeah, the universe is huge, and Lord knows, as we look out into the universe, we're looking back in time, and that's just pure fact, because of how fast the light moves and how far away, you know, the next star system is, even the next galaxy, you know, even though how close those are, they're still pretty far away, and there's even galaxies even farther away. As we look farther and farther away, we're looking farther and farther back in time, you know, and man, it's a huge universe. Is it currently? It's not considered infinite, you know, because of, you know, it goes from Big Bang Theory, where everything started from a single point, and then expanded. Now, there's some other theories when it comes to, is it ever going to be ever growing or not? And I'm not going to go there because I don't know enough about that part of it to say for, you know, definitively for what the current science says.
Yeah. But what the general thought is that we have a bubble that we live in.
Right.
And that bubble was created by the Big Bang.
Right.
Or, as some put it, a more modernist term, the expansion. I think it was expansion. Oh God, I forget the exact terminology that was used when I heard about it. It was so basically, it wasn't listed as a big bang, but as a expansion from a point.
Yeah, but right now it's considered a big bang. But anyway, but there is now. This is I know when it comes to the possibilities and probabilities of said instance. The whole idea of that we're alone in the universe is, I mean, truly thought to be impossible, just because of the possibilities that are out there. Of course, if there are other species out there, will we ever meet them? Probably not, just because of the amount of distances involved. Unless there's, you know, the whole idea of a wormhole actually comes to be true, where you can actually go from galaxy to galaxy, you know, through a wormhole, you know, but.
Well, here's another thing. This could be such a deep dive on the topic. The other possibility is that species that are existing out there that are, you know, technologically advanced may only have a small window where we would detect them. I mean, you have the possibility of not necessarily staying to radio transmissions as a normal form of communications, if they find something better or more connected. Also, the very fact of the distance involved doesn't mean that we're going to necessarily get a good, clear signal on anything that they do put out, because of the distance and physics involved and all the interfering factors.
So, right.
And we could be the first. The universe could be that young. Or there could be gazillions of them out there, but they just don't want to talk to us because we're confirmative, or they just haven't noticed us yet.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
You know, because, hey, look, you know, we've only been doing radio transmissions that we're aware of for the last, what, 100-something years?
Mm-hmm.
And 100 light years is not really that big on the scale of the universe. It's a very localized thing.
Yep.
And in our local neighborhood, we might be alone.
Yep. And that's why I think, you know, and with different distance involved, that, you know, even if there are other species out there, that the possibility of actually meeting another one is next to nil in my mind.
Well, they could already be here and just be kind of like listening and going, you know, for their amusement.
Yeah.
Observing, looking at what the worms are doing.
Yeah, of course, there comes the question that some people have brought up as a speculation when it comes to that, is that, is it easier to travel through time than to travel through space? You know, that possibly if we ever see aliens, they might be just advanced versions of us, you know.
No, because time travel, I think, might be actually a technical impossibility other than in forward.
Yeah, personally, I think time travel it's
an extension of the grandfather problem. It's not that you would go back and say kill your grandpa and wipe out your own existence. It's the fact that if you went back that far, even a second, you change the entire mass of the universe.
Literally. Yeah.
It's a big math problem, basically. It's a big physics equation. And if you were if a 200-pound person went back in time on Earth, you know, 20 million years to look at the dinosaurs, it doesn't matter if they don't step on anything. The fact is they will change the mass of the Earth by 200 pounds. And they'll change the trajectory of the Earth by infinitesimally small amount that today would mean nothing for tomorrow, but over millions of years would literally just change everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just on my part.
Oh, understood.
And again, we're here to talk about SFB monsters.
Yeah, let's get back to SFB monsters. I sidetracked us on that. That's my fault. So this week is the moray eel of space, the terror of the depths of space. A creature half a kilometer long. That's pretty short.
Bigger than your ship.
Yep. Living in a hard vacuum and eating ships for breakfast. Literally, is reported to be in a remote sector. A starship is sent to destroy it. Obviously, he's not very fast. He is. Oh yeah. Yeah, I read this. I read up for this one last week. I just never got to it. I remember some of the things, which are kind of tricky. Which is, okay, the monster moves at speed 12, turn mode 0, which means that he can whip around to any direction really quick. It moves directly unless it moves to attack the ship. The monster is not. If the monster is not in 22 hex four, this is for a scenario where the planet is in 2201, i.e. right on the edge of the board. If the monster's direction A from the planet, reverse this and the monster moves in direction D, and also the reminder, this is the floating map, so it can get above the planet. If the monster is above the planet, then it goes, turns around and goes direction D towards the planet once more, because it wants to attack the planet. Any ship can disengage from the monster, blah, 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 blah. Now, where is it? Here it is. If the moray eel, the eel is struck by a direct weapon, the monster will, on the next impulse, move immediately to the hex of the unit, up to 6 hexes in a burst of speed in a single impulse. This violates normal speed limits. No kidding. It's very, very fast to move 6 hexes in one impulse. Now, here's the fun part. Where is it? Right. It attacks the ship by biting. Where's the one I want to read? I'll find it sooner or later. If there's more than one firing, the monster will attack all of them at random in a biting frenzy during the same impulse in a random order, even if they're 6 hexes from the monster on opposite sides. So in other words, if it's 6 hexes to one unit and there's another unit which is basically 12 hexes from that unit, it still attacks it. So
yeah, it's within the radius.
Yeah, it's crazy. The biting is damage roll of 1 to 6, 10 to 5. The damage is scored directly on the ship. It ignores shields and power and PA panels. So, ouch. It cannot be towed. There it is. Because of the maneuverability of the eel, the weapons of the ship cannot hit it if fired beyond 6 hexes. So, as I read before, which is if you're the moray eel can move 6 hexes if attacked. So, but the same thing is you can't fire at it unless you're within 6 hexes. So,
yeah, but you can dip in and dip out.
So as soon as you attack it, it bites you. So, which is, I find it's funny, but in my mind it has to be like that. Otherwise, you kill it so quickly.
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, here's a question. Does this one fall under the does it have the rule where you can basically gather intel on it and figure out how to kill it without having to shoot it?
Hold on. Okay. Yes. Say hi, Zooks. Hi, Zooks. This is Live You. Okay, you said num num. Okay. The victory is destroyed when the monster is destroyed when it has received an unknown number of damage points. After scoring 200 points, the starship player rolls a die, and if the result is a 1, the monster is dead. If not, the starship player may roll a die again at the end of any impulse, in which at least additional 10 points of damage has been scored. Not once for each 10 points, but any impulse that you've scored more than 10. And then if you roll a die 1, then it's destroyed again. Alternatively, you can accumulate... Goodbye. Here, we'll go up there. You can collect 200 points of information, and if the monster reaches the planet, the player loses immediately. Big surprise. And that's, again, that's the alternate uses the S6.1 that we talked about last week. Where, there it is. I wanted to bring up the monster defeat table again, I brought it up last week. I'll bring it again up this week, just a reminder, which is you have roll one. You have to basically have the monsters destroyed by a suicide shuttle. That gets difficult because he moves speed 12. A normal shuttlecraft can only move speed 6. That's assuming that they don't have warp boosters. And you don't have an MRS shuttle. And of course, you can't tractor an eel. So tractoring to slow them down does not work. And I'm not sure what size class they would be considered. But you know, it does, because it can't tractor it, they don't mention a size class. To all two, which is you'll be destroyed if held in a tractor beam. I'm not sure how that would work. If you can't tractor it, how can you destroy it by a tractor beam?
That's if you get a result off of the information stuff. If it says must be killed by tractor beam, then you can use a tractor beam on it and that kills it.
Understood.
That was easy.
Right, roll 3, of course, 200 points of damage. Roll 4, monster can be destroyed by a probe. I'm assuming it just launched a probe and not actually using a probe as a weapon. 5, basically, 5 says, I'm sorry, not enough data. Get 100 more points of data. And
that's why in the tactics manual it would tell you things like, always reserve at least one probe in case that's the only way to kill it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, roll 6, which is communication is established with the monster, assuming that you have not scored more than 50 points of damage. You become friends with it and you win there. If you have more than 50 points of damage against it, you lose. So
that would be an interesting test for Kirk.
Yeah, so say the very least, I think that one, using the alternates, in this case, against the moray eel would be interesting because of obviously if it the tactics basically mention that if you are going against this thing, what you should be doing is hitting it. Keep on hitting it, get behind it. Hit it, have it so it basically retreats six hexes back to attack, to bite you. And then it's going to turn back around and start going towards the planet again. Of course, that's going to take half a turn to recover the amount of movement that it just did to bite you. Because that's what it says. In the first turn, arm your weapons and move toward the monster. Second turn, move to one hex behind him, do emergency decel, and give him a full alpha accept his bite. Then, on the next turn, switch in reverse and go and back away in the range 6. You know, give him whatever weapons are available. And keep on going backwards. So, which makes sense. Yeah, and again, to me, that makes sense. There's one minor there's a minor issue there, which is, okay, this works if you're using the standard standard victory conditions, which is 200 points of damage, kill it. At least possibility to kill it. And then 10 more points of damage going forward from there. And that makes sense in that case. But in my mind, using the alternate method, which is gathering 200 points of information, is a heck of a lot harder to do. Because you got to do basically the same thing, but you have to keep the amount of damage that you actually do to it to a bare minimum until you find out what the result is from gathering 200 points of information.
Correct.
Yeah, because
the problem is you might eat your ship if you go in and damage them and try to retrograde them and
right.
Extract them.
Right, but that's it. That's part of the problem.
The real question is, can your ship gather the necessary amount of points?
So,
the feds will be massively advantaged then versus most of the other races. But again, you know, the monster scenarios are really good for, like, if you're going to have a ship with a bunch of special sensors on it.
That's true.
Lots of labs. Exploration ships, that kind of thing.
Right. Oh, agreed. But yeah, this point out is that doing the alternate victory conditions is a heck of a lot harder to do because of there is the possibility that if you roll the die six after gathering the information, and it says, oh, if you did 50 points more than 50 points of damage to it, you lose.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, the real question here is it's the balance thing. What do you choose to do as a player? Are you going to play it under those conditions? Or are you going to play it under the gathering conditions? Because if you're playing, it's going to be basically incapable of surviving long enough to be able to kill it if that's what you have to do.
Right. Oh, understood.
And again, I think for the benefit of people who might not have listened last time, what exactly do you do when you go to gather information? How much of a pain is that? You know, how easy is that, or how hard is that? And that could really kind of answer the question on which way would you want to go on a particular step.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many points of information do you get from using shuttles? How many do you get from using your lab, special sensors?
Right. And which is one thing we found out that it's based off the range of the ship, and you multiply that by the number of labs you have on the ship. So obviously, a Fed that has lots of labs is going to be able to gather a heck of a lot more information than, say, a Klingon that might have like four labs. And these are just the cruisers, you know.
And also, these things scale, don't they? Like if you're
you mean the monster scaling?
Yeah, you can do the monster scaling.
Yeah. Yeah, there it is.
It doesn't need to get 200 points necessarily or do 200 points of damage.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay, whenever you're playing the scenario, especially using it as part of the captain's game or the frigate captain's game, the strength of the monster is adjusted to the ship used by the player. So it would be n the number of points of damage that must be scored. And you take the V, which is the BPV, divided by 125 and multiplied by 200. So basically, it's saying that the scenario is based on a ship of 125 BPV. And what's I? I is the number of damage points that must be accumulated. Oh, for each additional die roll. Okay. Drop all fractions. Yeah. So if you have a smaller ship, like in the case of, say, you have a frigate, which is worth 60 points, you only have to do 100 points of damage, and it only requires 5 points of damage to get the additional die rolls. This is using the original victory conditions.
Yeah. Maybe having this printed out for the frigate game in a couple weeks to help.
Yeah, I got to get that all set up. Right, that's true. Gotta love it. There's one thing that they noted on the scenario, which is this monster can easily be defeated by fighter squadrons and PF flotillas. Do not use those systems against this monster. There's no point in doing so. Just say you want and go on.
Aww.
Well, the thing is, fighters don't provoke it. So in which case, yeah, you can the fighters can just beat up on the poor thing and never be attacked. So it just, you know, keep on firing drones and then kill it. Boom, you're done. Woo, that was hard.
Well, you know what? Hey, guess what? That gives you a justification for having the fighter bases all over your little empire if you're like playing something that's a long-term scenario.
Oh, agreed.
And just to keep those things safe, yeah.
To be honest, I'm not sure how many moray eels of space exist out there in the Starfleet universe. I think that it's probably more likely you're going to have fighters and so forth as defensive measures against marauding like pirates. You know? But point taken. Okay. Do we want to start? What the heck, we'll start. Which is, go on to the next monster, which is the Cosmic Cloud, an unknown entity destroying shipping in the Sigma Draconis sector. Yes, what is it, Kitty? The fleet responds by sending a starship. Man, this captain's busy. Weeks later, it is found floating in space, the crew entirely dead from unknown causes. Another spaceship is sent to investigate. Oh, no.
Almost sounds like a Star Trek episode.
Agreed. Okay, Kitty, really? Just let you know, guys, who are watching on the video. Here's the local Zinni. Say hi, local Zinni. Hi, people. I want you all to die.
Oh, at least he's friendly.
Yes. Special rules, which is the monster produces a field that has the effect of killing crew units. Big surprise. The exact cause is, of course, unknown. At the end of each turn, the chart below is used to determine how many crew units are killed. The range given the closest approach. Here, so it has to get within range 10, and it'll kill up to four, you know, at range zero, or even range two, it'll kill up to, that's weird, four crew units per turn, right? At the end of the turn, yeah, 10, turn. The range given is close, okay, note that a ship that ends on turn, ends the turn at range 1 and moves to range 11 or more during the subsequent turn, it still had been at range 1 at the start of the turn for damage effects. So don't end the turn at range 1. That is a bad thing.
Well, didn't that mean that if you just do a run at it and go past it, it goes by your closest range?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For that turn, whatever the closest range is. It's just like a lab. If the shields are not operating at full power, losses are doubled. The monster effect within its sphere is pervasive. A down shield that is not facing the monster is the same as a down shield facing the monster. If you are in its field, exception G9.22, I gotta look at that. The monster can kill the entire crew. No, the crewmen are not actually killed, but are drained of a living energy. If the ship does not leave the scenario, the unconscious crewmen will die after a few turns. Note that the minimum crew units requirement on G9.4. So, if a man's shuttle is drained of living energy, the shuttle stops moving. in effect is not reduced by cloaks, webs, or atmosphere in any way. Boy, this thing enters in a planet. Oh boy, they're dead. The effect ends up, extends up a temporal elevator, counting each hex of elevation as the hex distance for determining the effect. Again, monster moves four hexes, random pattern. Single die roll, you know, that same old. I gotta look at this. Okay, so obviously you can't operate the shields at minimum. You have to do it full power, otherwise you double your losses. Now, that's one thing I don't understand here. That said, the monster's effect, you know, with its sphere is pervasive down shield that is facing, you know, not facing the monster, the same as the down shield facing the monster. What's the effect of having a down shield? My assumption is that it basically completely kills all the crew.
I'm sorry, yeah.
At least that's my assumption. That's one thing I've not yet done and I need to do. I just actually, according to Gary, he said that there were some updates to the monster scenarios in the some of the captain's logs. Oh yeah. Oh, okay.
Maybe SFD should put out like a module that literally just a consolidation of all the monster stuff.
They could probably do that.
Hard for them to do.
Well, that's definitely something to bring up with ADB, because that's something I feel like that could probably people would actually purchase that. I know I would. Especially given that the master electronic rulebook, that one doesn't have any of the scenarios. So, you know, it'd be nice to actually have the monster scenarios like in module S1, where, you know, it's a collection of scenarios. Oh, quick note. I just checked when it comes to the chat room, and Ross mentions that Monsters is just a fleet 1800 BPV versus a group of standard monsters. So it's monsters that have already been known, that are known. So that doesn't have to contain additional monsters. And West also mentioned that, don't forget that MCIDs kill suicide shells too. So in other words, if you try to hit the eel with a suicide shuttle, MCIDs could possibly kill it on the way in.
Oh, that's why you get a ring zero and drop it off.
Yeah, actually, even ring zero.
You give it like one chance instead of like risking more.
Okay, moves. Okay, during each impulse that the monster is moving, the roll one die and move the monster in that direction. Da-da-da-ba-ba. Monster ignores webs for all purposes. The web ignores the monster. Starship may fire weapons at the monster, recording cumulative damage scored for possible use later. Enveloping classifier cannot envelop this monster. Not sure what that means. Does that mean it does less damage? Or just mean that it's like a shuttle which takes all damage. Mines operate normally against the monster. SIP uses lab rules to accumulate information. Again, the monster cannot be held in a tractor beam. Ignores a lot of other terrain effects too. Okay, now the victory conditions. The monster wins if the starship disengages or the crew is all killed. Can you stop that? Obviously, you know, well, quote unquote killed. Actually, it would be killed because of if you it knocks out the crew, and then if in a couple, as I said, it's a couple turns after all of them are actually knocked out, you know, drained of energy, they die. Player wins if you can accumulate 400 points of scientific energy of information, uses the information to determine what will destroy the monster using, big surprise, the table in S6.1, which we just went through earlier. And so it's 400 points. So obviously it takes twice as long to get the necessary information points for this monster. It's slow, which is important. Now, okay, let me, while I'm here. Don't mind me, folks. What I'm doing is I'm going to see if I can find. I'm looking at the wrong thing, aren't I? This is the minimum crew units. Actually, let me look at that for a moment anyway, because that's kind of important. That's okay. If the original crew is, let's say, if it's original crew is 5 to 8, minimum crew is 2, 9 to 12, 3, 13 plus 4. So, wow. What's the normal crew for CA? Actually, let me look at this. See if this has number. It doesn't have it. I was hoping that they might just have it. Just leave it there. Nope. I was looking at the tournament cruisers, and hoping that they might have the number of crew units. I don't have it off the top of my. I'd have to look up. Wrong one. I think I had to look up the actual a regular ship. You know, look at that SSD for that, or possibly go to like the module G3 and look at the appendix there, because I'm pretty sure they list the number of crew. But obviously. Don't get very close to this thing, because it can kill you so fast, because of even out to range 2, you can kill up to 4 crews, and that's assuming you have your shields all the way up. Now, and if you get below your minimum crew, let's look at that for a moment. I know what happens is that I forget what some of the restrictions. Undermanned, here it is. Restrictions for an undermanned ship. Basically, if you go below minimum, assuming that you have actually your number of active crew units is not 0. If a ship is undermanned, it cannot operate any equipment except power, producing systems, engines, APR, batteries, control system, sensors, scanners, and shields. It can move, but maneuverability and effect turn mode is increased by 1. 1 crew unit can be assigned to movement and conduct all movement, turning, and synapses, but a second unit would be required to perform a HET. There's no effect on nimble status. In order for a ship to move, including tactical maneuvers, while 1 crew must be assigned to control systems. Ew, freaking hell. Okay. Oh, that reminds me.
Well, if you're talking like 40 is Korean, that's not too bad.
Yep. But from the sounds of it is that to move requires two crew units.
You're going to add crew units on your discretionary, can't you?
Yep. So,
You can pad your crew. It's like, hi, we're taking a few extra extras with us. No reason.
well, the thing is, you have to get 400 points of lab, of information just to have a chance of then killing it. Obviously, if you might want, since it's going to take you so long, you might want to just be trying to kill it and pray that you don't roll a die roll of six after you collect the proper information. Now, at the same time, the key there also is that you can't get too close. Obviously, the closer you get, the more information you get more rapidly. But the closer you get, the more crew units that die, and you can't t from this looks of it. As I said, I have to find out the number of crew units. Actually,
It's right on the SSD.
yeah. If soon you have the SSD,
Don't
that's the
you have a
problem.
copy of the battles in your room? I think heavy cruise is around 40, 43 ish.
Can we just look? I just don't have it.
Yeah, he's probably
Okay.
about the
Okay.
same.
Okay, let's go for a Seltorian destroyer, just for giggles. That is a destroyer has 25 units, 25 crew units, which is not bad. A Jindarian heavy cruiser. I can look at these real quick. I'm assuming they're going to be around the same, and it's going to be like 36 units. Okay, it's blah, 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 this one. And it's 50, when it comes, oh, 50 for a Saltorian heavy cruiser.
And just keep in mind that it's like if you fall below the thing, the skeleton crew, that's where you take penalties in. If you have one more than the skeleton crew, you should be fine.
And the Alerian is 42 per unit, so that's not actually it's not. You got a bit of time actually.
Right, and you can pad it too,
Right.
and scale it to the. Yeah, let's see your BTV,
Right. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That is. Da, 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 da. Yeah. So if you have a regular cruiser, which I SM4. There. Da, da, da. And it's the same thing, right? Yeah. Same thing. 125. It assumes 125. So you could actually do some close-in runs, and you should be okay because with a cruiser with 42 crew units, you won't go below a minimum for at least 9 or 10 turns. If you get close, you basically go over them like range zero.
First crew will be fine.
Right. I definitely would advise don't do that too many times. Because,
Definitely advise padding.
right, well, the key here again is going to be the number of labs you have because of. Okay. Let me look at this again, because does it give me a rule number? Just because of that would be helpful at this moment in time. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, it doesn't say how to. I don't have it right. Oh, there's lab rules. Okay, G41. Okay, G4.1. One. Okay, there it is. Got the chart. So let's say you get to range one. Looks like it averages out to be around a six. So if you have, let's say, four labs, that's times six. That's going to be 24 units. And calculator to see 400 divided by 24 equals. That actually would require you, if you have only four labs, it takes 16 turns. So you got, if you calculate that out, that means you'll be dead to get before you get enough information.
Well, that's what you have shovels for and probes for, too.
Yeah.
So those are alternative things for picking up information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you said, you could actually add extra crew members and boarding parties, but really crew members.
Yeah, so you're going to want to use probes.
That's an area where that extra T-bomb doesn't matter as much as a bunch of extra crew guys. And they're all science personnel who mysteriously did not make it back.
I wonder why.
That but,
yeah. So with them, obviously, that presents a difficult problem then.
What's the idea?
Because, well, now, fortunately, when it comes to the monster, at range two, it averages out around a three is what it does. So you looks like from the chart, you're going to want to stick around range three to five. You don't want to get close in to the cosmic cloud. Get close into the cosmic cloud, you will die. Especially if the cosmic cloud rolls really well. If you, on average, it's still, three is nothing to be nothing to sneeze at. In theory, you can get away with it for range two, because if he averages a three, you know, three crewmen dead, you can get away with it. You'll be cutting it close, but I feel like you can get away with it. Which is, okay, calculator again. Ah. 42 divided by 3 equals 4. You got 14 turns before you go. All your crew is dead, and therefore it would be like 30. You have somewhere between 12 and 13 turns before you get below minimum. You get to minimum crew levels, and yeah, definitely you could. At 13, you could actually move. In which case, you're dead. Because of when it comes to the victory of the condition of the scenario, you have to kill the monster. And that when you get below the minimum crew units, you can no longer kill the monster because you no longer can fire your weapons.
Exactly.
Right. And da, 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 da. So my question is, and I don't see it mentioned. I think I'm just gonna look at this real quick. Okay, the crewmen have been killed. So they're considered they are dead. They're dead. In theory, they're not dead, but after their energy is drained, you can't put the energy back into them, so they will not wake up again. So they're basically dead.
Here's a question. Under Captain's additional options thing, can you, and I know I'm butchering whatever the term is for that, but can you add extra probes to that?
Oh, yes and no.
Because extra probes and extra crewmates would probably be what you need for this scenario.
Yeah, actually, in theory, you can, if you have drone racks, you can actually make a drone. A probe, sorry, A probe is actually one of the options when it comes to building a drone.
Yeah, that wasn't what I was asking. But yes, you could have probe drones. But what I was saying is, for the probe launcher that's on your ship, it has so many charges.
Yeah,
So
but
you buy additional charges for that.
no, yeah, you can't the probe launcher, you can't buy more probes.
You can't buy additional probes.
Yeah, if I call
Okay.
correctly, it comes with five probes. Actually, I should actually have it here. Doo, doo,
Oh,
doo,
yeah, that's
yep,
not
five
familiar.
probes. Yeah, comes with five probes. And if I call correctly, it goes use the same chart as the lab. It's just that since it can actually go, it can actually fire, it can actually be closer.
It's a 360 for lab purposes. So
Right.
you don't
Can
have to
you
be like any arc. For using it as a weapon, though, you have to be in a very narrow line.
Right. It's directly ahead of you. It requires 2 points of warp for two
Yeah.
turns.
But for the important part of this is as an information gathering. I was just wondering if you could buy a reload for your probe launcher. That would be helpful.
Yes, agreed. What
If
is
you
it?
have a GRAS, you could throw a probe launcher, a probe drone at it too, I guess.
Yeah, oh yeah. If you can actually
And the thing is, you're
to
really into
me,
time
here's
constraints, so
the thing. Here's the thing about
you're
probe
trying
drones.
to.
Thank you. To me, the thing with probe drones is, to me, it would be cheating. Just because of, according to the description of the scenario, you got one ship that goes out, never comes back. They send another ship. They don't know what they're going to need. To me, loading up the ship with as many probe drones that they can legally purchase is cheating. I
It's
think
not.
I've
I don't think it is. I think if you're going into any monster scenario,
Well, the thing is, you don't know what you're
for
going to be going out there to.
gathering, that's exactly the point. You don't know what you're going in, and using everything you can have to gather intel is the priority. Because when you launch a probe drone, you're basically using it as an additional lab, and that would be critical. Critical for races that don't have labs or very many labs on their boats. I don't think that's cheating at all. I think that's called planning ahead. You're not going into a combat mission versus 100 pirates. You know you're going into an unknown scientific problem. And if you're going into a thing and it turns out to be a combat issue, under the rules for SFE, you could just basically disengage, and if you're outgunned, you probably win the scenario by surviving. So it's not cheating at all. That's just called playing the game. The game in monster scenarios is, unless it specifies in the scenario that you here's how you kill the monster, it's going to be gather intel. How do you gather intel? You got a probe launcher? Yay, that's an extra lab. You got a drone rack or a bunch of drone racks, and you can load them all up with, probes. Hey, that's just saving you effort and time. I don't think it's any more cheating than, overloading your photons to get more damage out of them. You're tailoring your ship for the task is what you're doing with your extra points.
Understood. Okay, well, with that, we got to wrap this up for this evening. Doug,
yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Is there anything that you want to talk?
Yeah, Gamers is in 2 weeks. Please, for the love of God, go on to every SFP thread that there is out there. Any group, anything that comes up on your Facebook feed and say, hey, look, we're doing this event at Gamers of Winter. And I think it would mean more coming from, like, you know, Paul. Because you're running the actual event, then it would be coming from me, who is organizing the convention event. And there's plenty of like Starfleet battle groups on Facebook and everywhere else under the sun.
So. Very true. And just a reminder of what's going to happen at Gamers of Winter. And that is that there are currently two things that I'm currently running. One is multiple demos for Federation Commander. For anyone who wants to play Federation Commander, I'd be happy to teach you. I will be there for the whole weekend. I've got set aside times that I'm explicitly available. Obviously, if I'm not doing anything, I'd be happy to pick up, you know, teach you immediately. And be happy to do such thing. This other thing that's going on is a weekend, you know, both Saturday and Sunday. Now, I still don't plan on coming out on Monday. Event, which is called basically running the Frigate Captain's Game. So the idea is that people come out, they play. We can play against, there's some of the monster scenarios. Also, we have facing other people. And the person with the most points, they win the tournament for the weekend. And I will come up with a prize for that. I'm not figured out what prize that is at this moment. But you guarantee I will be giving out a prize. And obviously, if you're the only person there and you want to be in the Frigates game, I will be happy to play you. So you'll, at the very least, if you're the only person there, we will be playing a lot of Starfleet battles then. Okay?
And just a side note on that, this is Saturday and Sunday. We have the space for Monday, although Paul is going to be running this particular event. And his demo Saturday and Sunday. But,
yep.
You know, if a handful of SFP players come out there, you'll have a good bit of space for both Saturday and Sunday to do those events and any other events you want to play, any other scenarios you might want to play.
Yep.
You can literally set it up for the whole weekend. And, this place will be perfect for, like, the FNE players, but... That's, you know, just my thought on it.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Well.
Oh, and the online registration to have your badge ready for you when you come in, it's going to end late next week. It doesn't mean you can't come. It just means that, you know, you might be waiting in a different line on Saturday morning. And we'll just make your badge on the spot instead of having it with your name already on it. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's no additional charge as far as I know. Is that right, Paul?
That's correct. There's no additional charge.
So the only thing you'd be paying for is your badge for the day or days.
Right. You only have to pay to get into the con, and that's it.
And there might be a few rooms left, but according to the people that run the hotel, there is a large group that books the hotel for that particular weekend, although they do not book the meeting room. They do it for some other event somewhere. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to stay somewhere else if you come down from out of town.
Right.
But really, it's Harrisburg. It's a freaking short commute from If you live in Baltimore or even the D.C. area, it's only an hour to an hour and a half drive. You know, if you live in New York City, it's a four-hour drive. If you live in Jersey, it's a 2.5 to 4 hour drive, depending where you're coming from. You know, so that's basically it. We're more convenient than, like, driving to Columbus for most of the people on the East Coast. Extremely convenient.
Very true.
Yay.
Okay.
That's all I got for that.
Okay. Well, Doug, you have a good night.
Thank you.
So, had a wonderful discussion on two different monsters. Hopefully, you know, we will, I know, hopefully we will be continuing on next week onto one or two more monsters and talk about them, talk about if they're vicious or they're little kittens. And hopefully my local Zinni won't be bothering me nearly as much. He's now gone, probably waiting in the kitchen, waiting for me to give him a treat. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.